Good morning. I had to laugh at Ron's comments on messing up that song. When I sang with the firemen, we did a hymns album one year, and that was a song that I had the lead on. And so when we record it, I can guarantee you that I have messed that song up more times in an hour's time than probably anyone who's ever walked the earth. We had to do it over and over and over again, and but I think the message still gets through. I appreciate your enthusiasm this morning. Good to be with you. It's been a busy, good weekend. A lot of lack of sleep along the way. We flew into Portland on Friday evening, and our flight got delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed some more. And we finally got to our hotel room at 2:30 Saturday morning. And had a quick night's sleep and breakfast with some family there in Portland, and then got down here. And I just want to say before I start, thank you. Thank you for your hospitality this weekend. You have been very welcoming. We've learned all about the church in Eugene, and we've taken the tour of the building and of the community, and it's been a really good weekend. And also, especially, I want to thank Mike. Mike has been my communication back and forth there in Arkansas to here in Eugene. And it's been very good, and he's been very helpful with information and emails, and we've learned Skype along the way, and it's been a good process so far. My wife, Stacy, is over here in pink, and she'll be glad to meet you guys today, too. We have two boys that you can kind of see there. David is on the left, Nathan is on the right. This was Easter Sunday this year. They magically went into their closets and picked the same clothes without being prompted for pictures or anything like that. They actually came out in the same shirt, and we laughed pretty hard, and took their picture. That's my sad crepe myrtle by the mailbox behind them. David is going into the 7th grade this coming year. Nathan will be going into the 5th grade, and they are great kids. I wish they were here so you could meet them. David fears flying a little more than I do, which is saying something, and so he was not excited about the idea of getting on a plane and was much happier about hanging out with Grandma this week. So he is in Nebraska hanging out with cousins and grandma and having a good time. But they are our lives in a lot of ways. I got a great text from David yesterday on his iPod. He's figured out texting recently. And he was encouraging me and telling me I would do well and all those things. And from a 13-year-old, I'll take that. That was a pretty good thing. This morning we'll be in Luke chapter 15, if you'd like to open your Bibles. Luke chapter 15. I'll move around a little bit, hopefully not too much to make you dizzy. I found out on this trip, we drove 1,000 miles to Nebraska to drop the grandkids off for Grandma and flew out of Denver, and somewhere along the way, I've discovered this fun little thing in my sciatic nerve that occasionally just fires, and it's exciting, and I never know when it's coming, and so if I fall over at some point, it's normal. I have not been taken over by the Spirit, I don't think. So we'll just kind of try to keep going, but if I move around, it seems to work better, so I'll move around some. This morning, we're going to talk about parables of lost things. I started thinking about it's Father's Day, and that's a great day for a lot of us, and it's a hard day for a lot of us. For some of you, that dad relationship, whichever end of it you're on, is a great relationship. For others of you, it's not as much. It's a difficult relationship. For some of you who may have lost a dad recently or lost a son or a daughter recently, it's a tough relationship. I feel like it's getting away from me. Hang on. Occasionally, it's like there's a little gnat right here. For some of you, it's a hard relationship. And Father's Day in our house growing up was just another Sunday. I lived with my grandparents and my mom. My parents divorced when I was a baby. And I last saw my dad when I was 5. I have two memories of my dad. One of them is being in New Jersey. We lived there until I was 5. And I remember being spun around on one of those little round sleds with the rope on the end of it. And it is the happy memory of Dad. It is just a neat thing. And I can remember laughing as probably a 4-year-old at the time when that happened. And I can remember the smile on his face. And that's a good memory. The second memory, not as much. The second memory, I was a junior in high school. And he still lived in New Jersey. And we lived in Alabama. And I had won a trip after writing an essay to go to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, and learn all about history and politics and all that stuff. And our flight came into Philadelphia, which is about 45 minutes from Valley Forge, and about 45 minutes the other direction from where my dad lived. And so I told him that I'd be coming nearby and that we would be sitting in the airport for about an hour and a half one day if he had time to come over. And he seemed really excited about the idea. It had been, I was 16 at the time, so it had been 11 years since we'd seen each other. And I remember vividly sitting in that airport and sitting in that airport and sitting in that airport and seeing guys who looked slightly like an older version of me walk by and wondering if this might be the one. And I sat and I sat and my plane boarded and I went home. And I just felt so let down in that moment. And so I get it. If you're on the other end of this Father's Day thing, I understand it can be tough. On the other hand, for me, getting that text yesterday, getting a Happy Father's Day call from my kids this morning as they were on their way to church in Ogallala, Nebraska, was a neat thing. And I've seen the flip side of it. So wherever you're at, we're there, and we understand. And we'll see a story about a father and son here later in Luke chapter 15. But let's start out in verse 1 of chapter 15. Now the tax collectors and sinners were gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." These guys drive me crazy when I read about them in Scripture. They drive me crazy sometimes, and other times they scare me to death because I see a little piece of myself here and there. I see the times I get frustrated with people. I see the times that I lack patience with people. I see the times where I put myself in one category and other people in another category. And I think of this whole concept of saying that he's eating with tax collectors and sinners, and how crazy that sounds, because really, who of us is not a sinner? Who of us has not struggled even today with something in life, with our attitudes, with how many days do you get up on a Sunday and you're running a little behind getting here and everything's not going well, and it's not happy God thoughts going through your mind? It's frustrating life thoughts going through your mind. How often might you sit here, and as great as whatever you might be hearing sounds, your mind is 100 other places? How often in your workplace is it hard to be clothed in Christ in what you do? It's a tough life sometimes. And as they say he eats with tax collectors and sinners, I just want to hand these guys mirrors. Say, who are you? Who is it that you think you are? And then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Now, personally, I don't have 100 sheep. Or even one sheep, for that matter. And so I don't know what my mind would do with this. And my first question is, think for a moment, when the last time is that you lost something? And I would imagine for you, it's a varying thing, depending on what it is that you've lost, as to what kind of time and effort you put into looking. We have, in our house, lost a set of keys. And it's incredibly frustrating. And we have taken the little unlocking thing for your car off of one set of keys and the key to that car off one set of keys and put it on a little ring by itself. And we are constantly having to remember who has whose keys and all those things. And we look and they're just nowhere. We tried to retrace our steps the day that they disappeared. They're not at the restaurant we went to. They're not any place we went along the way. We cannot figure out where they're at. And it is just frustrating. But at the same time, life goes on. There are other times when we lose something and we're not willing to stop and just let it go. We've got to find it. We've got to find this thing that's so important to us. And those things are different. We see in these parables, we can be content or we can be complacent about these things. There are times where we just reach a point where we don't care anymore. It's been gone so long, it doesn't matter, we'll move on. Or we'll reach the point of contentment where we have learned and adapted to be without, and it's okay. And in these parables, we also see some of these things are about property. The sheep are property. And I know that's kind of foreign to most of us. Do we have any shepherds here, by chance? I didn't expect a lot of shepherding going on in Eugene. I don't know a shepherd. I've been around sheep a couple times. They strike me as kind of dumb animals. And maybe I'm being too hard on the sheep. But I always struggle when I read these things comparing us to sheep in Scripture, because that's not something that I strive for. And they're property. And when it's stuff, sometimes we will look for stuff and other times we won't. And then we see in the second parable, we'll look at money. And there will be this coin that is lost. And as things begin to rise in importance, things are a little different. This guy has 100 sheep, loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And that's important, because we're the 99 in a lot of ways, and I know our daily lives are a lot different, and we do different things. I have no idea where you're at in your walk with God, but we're here, and that's something. And yet there are so many people out there that need God. Some who've been here before and have just gradually moved away. We've done a lot of talk lately in our home church about the younger generation and how they are moving away from the church. And the statistic going right now, according to what we've read, is 50% of people, when they reach age 18, never come back. And why that happens and what we can do about it. We have a missionary in Ghana. The church in Ghana has a board, much like you guys have in the foyer with the pictures on it. And he showed a picture in a slideshow of this board, and I was assuming it's like you have. It's the members, so everybody can see who's who. It is the backsliders board. And I kid you not, when he showed the close-up, this thing's going to fall off, I know. There's a sign above it that says backsliders. And these are the people who have not been there in more than a month. And their pictures are right there when you walk in. And I tried to imagine this in American society and how well that would fly and the lawsuits that would ensue and all of that. But I thought, it matters. They care about the fact that the people on this board, and they want to put faces with the names, and they want to go and find these people. And sometimes we lose sight of that. And maybe you're better at this than every other church I've been to. I don't know. But every church that I've been a part of has somebody that when the name comes up, oh, they haven't been here in years. Haven't been here in years, haven't seen them, don't really know what's going on. And we lose sight. And so when we hear this parable of the sheep, the one sheep that's lost, it's just one out of the 100. And yet he goes after, and then there's this great celebration. And then the second parable we look at. Suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? Now, you probably remember a time in life that you got out of your car or walking or whatever, and you saw a penny on the ground. You picked that penny up. Now, if my kids see a penny on the ground, they're more concerned about the germs on the penny than about the monetary value that the penny brings with it. And the number of what it takes to make someone bend down now compared to what it used to be is totally different. I don't know what that number is for you, where that money would matter. I was at a youth event one time, and I saw the speaker crumpled up a $1 bill and threw it into the crowd, and no one moved. And I thought, a dollar doesn't matter to these people anymore. And he thought it was hilarious and said, what do I have to crumple up to make people move at this point? Money matters to a lot of us at different levels. And it may not be the penny that we break down for, but there will be a point where you have enough money that you worry about it and you would look for it. I misplaced a paycheck one time. I looked for it. I looked for it until it was found. And this woman, she misplaces the coin and she sweeps the house. She searches carefully. And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. I wonder if we think very often about this scene in heaven. What is it like when someone repents and there is this scene in heaven where there is a party and people are excited that somebody has come back? And I think we experience that here too. I think we're excited when someone comes back. And yet, I don't know if we do enough to make people feel that and see that. And then we get to the story that carries most of the chapter, in chapter 15. Jesus continues. There was a young man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." Now, I want you to think, as we get into the story of the lost son, when is the last time you were lost? Now, we live in a world of GPS now. And I found my way from the hotel here this morning via the iPhone and the magic of GPS. But there have been other times, pre-GPS days, that I'd get lost. We joke a lot. My wife's family is a farming family, and they get direction really well. I don't. And especially I have found in Eugene, where the streets are not on a simple grid, at least not the ones I've been on. And my GPS will first say, turn west on whatever, and there's no sun in the sky right now. I don't know where do I go to turn west? I get confused. I've been lost. I've been lost in a bus full of people before and having to be the one who leads them somewhere. And it's a helpless feeling. It's a helpless feeling when you're lost because you want desperately to know where it is you should be. And we live in a world that gets this. We live in a world that is just circling around looking for direction in a lot of ways. And if there is one thing that I believe Scripture and God and His Son and the church has to offer, it's direction. We get it. We understand that it's not just about the things here, the struggles here. We understand there's something greater. And so think of that helplessness of lostness. Sometimes it might be on a trip. For some of you, you can remember back to childhood, or if you're a kid now, you can remember being in that store and getting just a little too far away from mom or dad, and that panic and fear and everything else that sets in. And so this son is heading towards lostness. Then he asks a bold, or what many of us might think is just a dumb question, which is, can I have my inheritance now? Could you imagine one of your kids coming to you and saying, you know, there's got to be a great inheritance coming my way. Can I have that now so I can, and they'd probably sell it to you in this kind of way, so I can enjoy it and you can see me enjoy it while you're here. I'd like to have that inheritance now. And the father is interesting to me in this story because my response is, no, you can't have your inheritance now. Or my response is, I lost $20 in the couch somewhere, and if you can find that, that's yours. Then there you go. Because there's really not that much more. You can have my car that has pieces falling off of it, or you can have something. But the inheritance is not going to be great anyway. Don't get too excited. But this dad, instead, gives a very, very different answer. The son says, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property. He divided his property between them. It's a patient, patient father. And I don't know about you, but there are days that I get the patient father thing pretty well, and there are days that I don't get the patient father thing well at all. My kids know how to push my buttons. They know what makes me go. They know what makes me go a little too far. They know what will upset me. They know what will get under my skin. And sometimes they avoid those things so as not to do it, and other times they like those things, and they just egg me on. And yet this father has the patience. He has the patience to divide the property. And we see that not long after the son goes off, he squanders it. Which, by the way, if we had never read this story before and you're an adult in the room, you know that this is where it's going. Because there's no way this is going to turn out well. I read online the other day, Michael Jackson, King of Pop, that passed away a couple years ago. His kids have a multi-million dollar a year trust thing going on because of how much money his music has made. So there are teenagers that are getting, I want to say it was $7 million a year, something like that. I would imagine if that money were to dry up, so would they. They're not putting all that away. They're not doing smart things with it. They are doing what most of us would do. When my grandmother passed away, she left me $1,000. She didn't have a lot in this life. She didn't have a big house, fancy car, any of that kind of stuff. She left me $1,000, and it was interesting to me that her instructions were what this guy did, which is have fun with $1,000. She said, don't spend it on school. Don't put it in savings. Don't do anything smart with it. Have fun with $1,000. And I walked into Circuit City with $1,000 in my pocket, and I started looking at stereos I could never have otherwise, and I bought this big, giant stereo that still sits in our living room now. Because I want to have fun with that $1,000. And I would imagine as this guy gets his money, he's got all the plans in the world. He knows it's going to last forever. He knows all the things he's going to do. And then it all falls apart because that's what it does. And so not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country because it's always better somewhere else. Grass is greener on the other side. Set apart for a distant country and there squandered his wealth in wild living. Or if you've got the old KJV, riotous living, one of my favorite phrases ever in Scripture. Squandered it all. We don't know exactly what that looked like. I imagine we could imagine what it would look like. We were driving down the road on our tour of Eugene yesterday, and there was, the people in the van were saying, I wonder if there'll be a protest today. And so we're driving along, and there's all these people carrying flags, and we were wondering what the protests were protesting. We later found out it was Flag Day, so it was okay. But they were going along with the flags, and we have a thought in mind of what this crazy living must be like. And he squanders it all, because it's fun, and there's not accountability or responsibility and all those things. And he finds himself in verse 14, after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, because he didn't plan ahead. It's everything that you have heard from your parents or told your kids. So famine in the whole country, he began to be in need, so he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. And then there's a day where he wakes up and he looks at what the pigs are eating and he has the thought, that looks pretty good. You know that you have gone to the very end at that point. And a lot of us, unfortunately, have to get there. We have a good friend back home right now who has destroyed his family, his marriage. It is so sad to watch. It's so sad to watch these people that were so seemingly together and loving and a part of church and everything else, and they've just thrown it away. And we keep looking at him and thinking, when is he going to understand what he's done? And the thing we keep coming back to is, he's gonna have to hit rock bottom before he gets it. And that's where this guy is. He has gone from apparently a good enough life that the father was able to take the inheritance and split it up at that moment, which even those of us, if we're doing pretty well with things, the thought of doing that today, it's a difficult thought. And he was able to do it, and he's gone from there to pig food looking good. And then he does what I think a lot of us would do. He came to his senses. It took that moment, but he came to his senses. And he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and yet here I am starving to death? And he starts to do something that if I were doing this, I would then begin to rehearse in my mind what I was going to say. First of all, I'd have to get past the pride of I have messed up. I would imagine in my mind the various tones in which I told you so could be said and what it was going to sound like when I had to go groveling back home. And he decides, all I want to do is be one of his hired men because his hired men are treated better than I am. That's all I want. I just want to go back and be a hired man. And I imagine on his journey home, as he's walking along, he rehearses this in his mind, how he's going to say it, how he's going to ask, and just thinks, I just hope that he will just take me back into the household at that level. And he learns about something. He learns a difficult lesson through what he does. He becomes broken, and then he learns about a father's love. It's the opposite a little bit of what we talked about at the beginning, what I experienced sitting in that airport just desperately wanting a father's love. He sees what a father's love is all about. Now, I want to show you a video real quick. And this family has amazed me for a long time. Let's see if this comes up. Maybe. There we go. You may have seen this story before. This family, the dad's name is Dick Hoyt. And his son, in childbirth, went through a traumatic birth and was left handicapped. He's in a wheelchair. He can't speak. He smiles a little. He does a little through expression. If you've ever watched the ESPYs, I think they were honored on the ESPYs a couple years ago. As he got into about junior high school age, they gave him this computer that he could somehow communicate with his family. And so for the first time, his family was able to hear what he was thinking and what he was saying. And this kid, Rick, said that he wanted to go run in a race. There was going to be, I think it was a 10K in their town. And he wanted to be in this race with his dad. And so his dad rigged up this stroller-like thing. And his dad was not a runner by any means. I try to imagine a child coming to me wanting me to run a race, and it would be interesting. His dad got this stroller rigged up, took his son out, ran in this 10K, and his son had a smile on his face through the whole 10K of the 10K. And when they got back, he got on the computer that he used to communicate, and he said when he is running in this race with his dad, he doesn't feel handicapped. That is the one moment in life that he doesn't feel handicapped. And what we see in this dad, I'm a little ahead of the video, but that's okay. What we see in this dad is the desire to help his son feel that as much as humanly possible. And so they have now run in, I believe it's over 100 triathlons. They've run in 70-something marathons. They've been in the Boston Marathon for the last 32 years. This year is the last year that they're going to do the Boston one. They have done 10Ks, 5Ks, and when you add them all up, it's about 1,000 races that they have run in. You might see in the video as we go along, when they do the triathlon and Dick swims, he has an inflatable boat with Rick in it tied to him as he swims in this triathlon. And his whole thought is, I'm going to give my son as many moments of not feeling handicapped as I can. That's what I want for my boy. And so he goes to race after race after race, and now he's become an inspiration to millions of people who have heard his story. He's done amazing things going around the country doing all this. And I say all that to say this. That's the kind of father's love story that we love to see and love to hear. It is so small in comparison to the father's love that we can know. Our father loves us in a way that is just unexplainable. And so when this guy is rehearsing his story to go back home and to ask to be a servant, the father, on the other end of this, cannot comprehend the idea of his son being a servant. Why would my son be a servant? He's my child. He's my son. And so he goes back home. We'll go ahead and move ahead. We're about at the end. He goes back home. And we see in verse 20, he got up and went to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. Now, I would imagine the son, and a lot of us, too, would probably imagine the father sitting on the porch in a chair and seeing him from far off, arms crossed, maybe a deep sigh, a little bit of head shaking. I think of the backslider board in Ghana, and I wonder if one of those backsliders shows up, what the welcome is like. If it's the party and the excitement, or if it's a little bit of the, where you been? What's been going on? And so as he comes home, father sees him. He's filled with compassion. And again, for those of us who didn't have that kind of dad at home, that's a hard thing to wrap our heads around with God. That's God. That's how God does things. That's who God is. He's filled with compassion for us. And so he sees him far off. He's filled with compassion, and he ran to his sons. He ran to his son. Threw his arms around him and kissed him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, and he's starting the rehearsed speech. This is what I've got prepped to say to you. Let me get this out. Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, didn't even react to that. Didn't say, well, you're right, you're not worthy to be called my son. Look at all this. You've wasted half my inheritance, and look at what you've done, what you've become. Instead, he calls to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. It's not a probationary period to get back into the household. Bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. It's excitement. And if you think the excitement of finding the sheep or the coin was excitement, finding the child, it's a very, very different kind of excitement. We went to Disney World with all the grandma took all the grandkids about 5 years ago now. And there was a point where the youngest of the grandkids saw something shiny and started to walk that direction. And my wife caught him because she noticed he was doing it. And I thought, what would it be like to lose track of your child here where there's just so many people? And we see this father that just wants to find his child. I've imagined a lot of times, I wonder what life at home was like while the son was gone. Wonder how many days it was the father waking up and saying, I wonder how he's doing today. Wonder how many days he sat there outside the house looking off in the distance, hoping to see what he saw on that day. And do you think it's any different with God for us? Or for the people on the backslider board? Or for the folks that you wonder, where have they been? Is God not just waiting? And are we not God's instrument a lot of times to find those people, to find the people that desperately need him? The father started this celebration, then we see in verse 25 where it gets interesting. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. He's been working all along. He's stayed there. He's done what he's supposed to do. He's working hard. He's out in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing. Wondered what in the world's going on. He called to one of the servants and asked what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." And I don't know if the brother has maybe imagined this scene a few times too and how it might go. And he seems to be the guy who's looking for the I told you so's or ready to give some out. He's the guy that I worry sometimes if I'm that guy. I don't want to be the guy who stands here in a holier-than-thou kind of way and says, "Well, I've been trucking along doing this all the time, and where you been?" He's like when we read the parable of the servants that show up at different times of day. If somebody showed up at 8 a.m. and somebody else shows up at 8 p.m., and you worked 13 hours and they worked one, you don't want the same wage. That's not how we do things. And yet God gives that great reward regardless. And so the brother, he doesn't know what to do with this, and he becomes angry and refuses to go in. Picture him out there just pouting, just doing a lot of, and people walk by and ask what's wrong. "Oh, you don't even want to know. This is just so wrong." And so he stands out there and he's angry. His father went out and pleaded with him. And isn't it interesting that even though the father is so excited about finding the one son, he's still got two sons. And for those of us who struggle on either end of this, whether it's that we have gone off and we don't know where we are, or we have people in our families who have gone off and they don't follow God anymore and we desperately want to bring them back, or if we're the ones who stay the whole time, God has a love for both of those groups and an expectation for both of those groups. He answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. You have never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends." I've often wondered when we show up to heaven, if we recognize everyone else, and we could have a whole theological debate about that, but if we recognize everybody else and we will see someone that we are surprised to see there, if we can be surprised in heaven, and if there will be a small older brother part of us that says, "Hang on a second, I was there every Sunday, I was there for class, I was there every Wednesday night, I went on a mission trip, I chaperoned a youth event. And that guy's here? Seriously?" And I like to think we wouldn't be that, but in daily life, we have those moments. And so he pleads his case as to why he's more deserving. And he says, "You never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends, but when this son of yours who has squandered your property, the son who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him? What are you doing?" And if you really think for a minute, the boldness of the question the son had in the first place of, "Can I have my inheritance now?" Is this reaction not every bit as bold and maybe uncalled for? "I've done everything you asked all along, and yet where is my reward? Why aren't things better for me?" And the father says to him, "My son, you were always with me, and everything I have is yours, but we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours is dead, was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he's now found." Now, a parable, we know, is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning, so there is something in here for us to learn. Lessons for us. First of all, we don't know it all. This son on the early end of the story, the younger son, he knows everything there is to know about life. And we have either been there or had people in our family who have been there, or we know people who are there. When I got to Westside in the summer of 2001 and sat in my first elders meeting, I probably talked as much as anyone in the room. I was 27 years old, never done full-time ministry in my life, but I knew how all of these things should be solved. And I have found that one of my best moves in the 13 years there has been to close my mouth sometimes, which when you have my job is a hard thing to do. But sometimes I need to sit back and I need to listen. I don't know everything. I don't understand everything about what goes on in your life. I don't understand all your family situations. I know some things about how the world works and other things I'd be completely wrong on. But this son thought he knew it all. And the interesting thing is, when it all circles around at the end, so does the older son, just in a different way. He thought he knew everything. And when you think you know everything, you're about to find out you don't. Something's going to surprise you. Something is going to catch you off guard. And all the reality that you thought you had is gone. Secondly, We make mistakes. And if you have not, I want to hear about that. We make mistakes. Now, what we're really good at is having a lot of patience with our own. And what we're really bad at is having a lot of patience with everybody else's. I felt for Ron during that song because I've had to start a song over before myself. Now, if I had never had to do that, I could sit there and think, what's up with that guy? What happened with that song? I understand completely how that is. We make mistakes. And the older brother, I'm sure, has not done everything perfectly along the way while he lived there, and yet he can see clearly the mistake in the younger brother. And we've got to be very careful to not do that. We've got to be very careful to have the kind of patience that we expect people to have for us. Third, God is a loving father. In a way that some of us get completely because we had loving fathers, and in a way that some of us have just longed for our entire lives. God is a loving father, and a loving father is not going to leave you out to dry. A loving father is not so interested in the I told you so that they don't get through to the compassion and the love. A loving father wants you to succeed. A loving father wants you to be the best person that you can be. A loving father wants you to be loving to those around you. God is a loving father. And because of that, we must show love. They're supposed to know we're his disciples by our love. And I wonder, is that the first thing people pick out about us? I would love to think that if you were to talk to somebody here in the community about the Church of Christ in Eugene, that they would say, those are people who love. I would love to think that people would say that first about Westside in Searcy. I don't know that that's true all the time. I think there are some of us that show it really well, and others of us that struggle. But we must show love. As we close, let's get practical for just a second here. I hope as we talk about this while we're here that someone has come to your mind. I mean, I know it's a parable and we can think of situations. I know we show the video and you can think of that father and son. But you know somebody who needs God. We don't have to get on a plane and fly to Zimbabwe or Ghana or Italy or wherever to find someone who needs God. We have to walk out the door and across the street. You have to go back to your workplace tomorrow. You have to be with your family. There is someone you know that needs God. And that's such a big task for us. Sometimes it seems like a gigantic task because I passed a sign that said the population of Eugene was 150-something thousand, I think. I think I put this on a sign. It was 150, 175, something like that. There's a lot of people in this town that need God. And we're around them daily, whether it's in your neighborhood or in your workplace or when you're out shopping or wherever. They need God, which leads us to the second question. What are we going to do about it? Because if we just have a great get-together here and sing songs and everybody feels happy and we feel maybe a little bit better about life when we leave, that's all fine. But that's not going to impact our world. That's not going to show people the love of the Father that so many people desperately need. How many people in this town don't even have a father? Never met their father. Or like me, saw their father the last time 36 years ago. There are people in this church that can fill a lot of that role. My wife told me a story as we were driving down here from Portland. There's a guy, Bruce Hall. Was that his name? There's a guy, Bruce Hall. My wife, by the way, she lived here in Eugene during childhood for 3 years, 79 to 82, if I remember right. And she has an older brother that's a few years older. This guy, Bruce Hall, that went here to church back in the early 80s, taught her brother how to lead singing. It's a kid with some degree of talent, and I'm going to give him something to do here at church. Her brother, Steve, is now in the preaching rotation at their church in Ogallala. They also don't have a full-time guy, and they're kind of in between things. And about once a month, Steve gets up there and preaches. I wonder how much someone like a Bruce Hall planted a seed 30 years ago, not knowing the impact that they're going to have on a whole different group of Christians in Ogallala. Steve is a guy that if he goes into a restaurant and somebody is looking a little too long for their credit card in the wallet, Steve will pull out money and pay for their meal. And people don't know what to do with that. That's something so different than they see in normal life. And he has had that kind of thing modeled to him in life. We have the opportunity to show that to people around us. We have the opportunity to have an impact. Not having a dad growing up, I had men in my life that were that figure. Men from church that helped me along the way. Men from church that have led me to the point that I can stand up here for probably too long now. there are ways that we can have an impact on the community around us. And that's what I hope we will do. That's what I hope we will be to people. I hope we will be the kind of love to people that they will see God's love through us. I hope that when we read something like they will know we are his disciples because we love one another, that will be so apparent that we just can't deny it. So this week, as we leave here, some of you guys will be back here tonight and we'll talk some more. But as we leave and go throughout our lives, I want you to think of those lost people. I want you to think of those people that have come to mind in your minds while we've been in here, and think about what you're going to do, how you're going to show them God's love, how you're going to begin that conversation. I'm going to assume you'll not bring them up and baptize them today, but you might take the first steps in someone's life, having no idea the impact it will have later. For each of us, there's somebody here who's struggling in your relationship with God, or maybe have not come into that relationship yet. There's sin that you struggle with, there's something you want to be better at, and that's why we have church. That's why we're here, to encourage you and to help you along and to try to help us grow too and to be more of who we need to be. If there's something we can pray about in your life, if there's something you need to confess to the church, or if you'd like to be baptized into him today and begin this new walk towards an incredible reward where a God runs towards you and puts his arms around you and is just so glad to have you home. Whatever needs you might have, if we can help you in some way, please come as we stand and sing.